Oh, we're going to start talking about seeing things. Well, I've seen half of the next season of Silo. How about
not
in, that?
Not interested, what? Kaz. Not interested. There's no cuckoo clocks or Ferris wheels or
how
awesome
do you know?
In Silo.
How do you know?
You know what? I'll watch it. And when there aren't, I'll come for you.
You won't watch it.
No, you're right. I won't watch it.
You won't watch it. Hello and welcome to the AV Forums Movies and TV podcast for October 2024. Tonight I'm joined by Simon Crust and Mark Costello.
Hello.
Nice. I just threw you both in there into the mix.
What's that?
Stereo, yeah.
Throwing us.
All one. All as one. Right, for October, we're doing movies, TV, and 4K all together in one big whammy.
The whole shebang.
Top 10 list of recommended streaming and cinema watches for October and a top 10 list of recommended 4K discs and Blu-ray discs to watch in October, plus our discussion of the month, juicy one, which is to flop or not to flop. It's basically a look at the top 10 box office disasters of 2024. There have been some really big swings by some very big, very experienced.
Some very floppy swings.
Yeah, celebrated auteurs who've come out swinging.
The year of the flop,
swinging with their flops.
I guess we're going to look at whether they deserved the slap, the short shock that they got, or whether it's a bit unfair, and actually whether they deserved it or not, whether it's all going to come to bite us when it comes to it being potentially just another nail in the coffin of big screen entertainment. So,
cup is half full tonight, aren't you, Kaz?
Well, I mean it. Yeah. Anyway, we will get into this when we take a look.
When we
at
get
this.
Into it,
yeah. Exactly.
Let's talk about good stuff first.
Sure. Top 10 things to watch at the cinema and on streaming in October 2024. So let's look at some of the best titles we've watched in October. And I'm starting really inauspiciously just to segue into our later discussion on the top 10 flops of the year with Joker 2, which got a whopping 5 out of 10, so it's not really one of the best things to watch this month, but it crawled onto the list just as a clickbait soundbite. Next is Walking Dead: Daryl Dixon, Book of Carol. I gave it a 6 out of 10, but it gets better. And episode 2 and 3 have been solid 8s apiece.
Wow.
So we'll see how that turns out, but really a lot better. Another strange one to shout out for: Citadel Diana. I ragged on Citadel, Amazon's Russo Brothers big screen nonsense. It turns out if you do it in Italy, in Italian, with a no-name cast and make it look like a low-budget riff on Aeon Flux, you've got me. And it really works. Cast that can act, chemistry with the stars, good kind of spy plotting, decent action, slightly future tech 2030 setting. Amazing architecture, really gives it natural architecture, really gives it a nice vibe, like none of that nonsense VFX that plagued the original Citadel. I loved it.
Wow.
I mean, I'm looking forward to the Indian set version, Honey Bunny, coming next month. Actually, looking forward
where
to
where are these titles?
Is that a joke?
It's not a joke.
Citadel was like
Citadel Honey
this,
Bunny,
yeah,
as this big franchise. Well, to be fair to this, Citadel Diana, the lead character's called Diana. I'm not really sure where they settled on it, but
who's the lead character in Walking Dead: Daryl Dixon, Book of Carol?
Is it Carol? It's the book.
It must be the Walking Dead, they're in the title.
It's the book,
Carol and Daryl. I mean, that's just silly.
Daryl and Carol, I put, yeah, as my pullout quote. It's great. Strange Darling, cinemas, and almost on digital. J.T. Molnar's serial killer subversion. I really enjoyed it. It's worth checking out. And some people who didn't.
A lot of people like it.
Yeah, some people who didn't see it coming really amazed at it, which is good. I certainly thought it was
and
good.
Shot on film, isn't it?
It loves being shot on film.
Loves being shot on film, and it blazoned, all shot in 35mm from soon as you turn it on.
It's a real shot on film, ex-Pearl kind of grindy, grungy affair. Woman of the Hour, Anna Kendrick's directorial debut. Kudos to her. It's a good good first salvo, very polished, very nice. Netflix job, but don't let that stop you. Got flavors of Fincher's Zodiac there. It's a true story serial killer thing. I mean, serial killer. Everything's serial killer these days, but it's good. It's good. It's worth checking out. Shadow Strays, unexpected gem for me. I love action films. I love The Raid. This is an Indonesian actioner from the guy who directed The Night Comes for Us, which is another Netflix winner. I love
Shadow
this.
Strays.
Yeah, it's like 2.5 hours of just non-stop Indonesian brutality. And it's ninjas. I mean, their calling card is they will take your head off, and the last sound you will hear as your head, your brain loses oxygen is the sound of whistling of your last breath through your throat.
Nice.
It's proper.
What? I'm no doctor.
Don't get into it. Don't get into it, Mark. Don't get
just,
into it.
Kaz, you should just have said ninja. That's it. That's all that was needed.
Whistling throats cut off. It's very, very, very violent.
Nice.
Nobody wants this. Another unlikely one. Netflix rom-com. What? I don't know how I ended up even watching this, but I thought it was great. Yeah, I think it's if you get lumbered having to watch something you don't want to watch, you might
and it turns out good.
Yeah,
and
you
nobody
might
wants get an extra point.
Yeah, it
nobody
really does.
Wants that.
I know, but anyway, it's surprisingly good. Shrinking season two isn't surprisingly good. It's as good as the first season, everything I wanted it to be, and it still continues to be some of my favorite work from Harrison Ford, who's really found a niche at being a
grumpy
grumpy
old man.
and very funny old man. He swears buckets. He's great. He's fantastic in it. And the last two we'll give proper shout outs to. Smile 2 seems to be an unlikely better than original sequel with Naomi Scott getting an Oscar. Does that sum it up?
I hope so. I mean, it's absolutely more of the same. There's no mythos expansion here. There's no deep dive into the lore behind those horrible rictus grins. Nope. It's just same curse, new person. And luckily for Parker Finn, that person is Naomi Scott, because she is absolutely fantastic. It's been a year for great Scream Queen performances. Definitely up there with the two in The Substance with Margaret Qualley and Demi Moore. And Nell Tiger Free for The First Omen. And Naomi Scott is absolutely up there. It's brilliant. It's a bit long, the film, if I'm honest, and it still ends with the most ridiculously designed CG beastie that you just shake your head at and wish to God the writer director had more faith in his concept without having to do that. But Naomi Scott is amazing, and the set pieces and the jump scares in this are next level. It is all about those jump scares, the tension, the atmosphere. Well worth it. I saw it in a packed cinema, and it was an absolute hoot. So yeah, if you liked Smile 2, this you'll be smiling even more at this one.
Nice.
It wasn't really. It was a bit poor, that, but you know, I tried.
And I'm going to end with Wild Robot, because
oh yeah,
I was not expecting this. I would say I was expecting to go and see Transformers 1 because it looked fun from the trailer, and because my son
we
loves
didn't watch trailers,
Transformers.
Cass.
Well, there are exceptions of the fact that the kids don't really want to watch anything without watching trailers, so I have to la 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 through them. But I give them a pass if it's a movie that I'm mostly going to see for them. So I'm going to see a Transformers movie. I probably need to watch the trailer because I need to know just how much sleep I'm going to get. it looked good. It looked fun. And the son's big into Transformers, and the daughter loves ScarJo, isn't it? As Alita. Is it Scarlett Johansson?
Isn't Lupita Nyong'o in this?
No, we're talking about Transformers 1.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were talking about Wild Robot. Sorry.
No, catch up, man. Anyway,
yeah, it is ScarJo.
So they were both hooked and desperate to see it. And then I got a preview screening for Wild Robots. And I was like, right, I've got to persuade them to see this. Persuaded them to see it. And I'm like expecting it to be good. I'm expecting it to be good. I'm watching it, first few minutes. I'm like, yeah, this is all right. And then the music kicks in and some of the more emotional bits kick in, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna get to me. Oh, this is about parenting, isn't it? Oh, and oh my Lord, my daughter had to console me. We were all wet-eyed in the cinema. You can tell how good animated movie is sometimes when the kids come out going, eh, it's an 8 or a 9, but the parents are like, yeah, this is straight up 10. I mean, that's an animated movie which wins with the child audience, but really actually wins with the adult. This is a you. This has got to be flat out the best you I've ever seen. It's absolutely
Better than
phenomenal.
ET. ET's
Yes.
coming for you, Kaz.
ET can come for me. I'll give him the finger.
Well, I'll give you
Anyway,
the finger in a minute, mate. Honestly.
I
Better than ET.
can't recommend this enough.
Good grief. This
Yes,
is unprecedented praise.
I really, really loved it. Unexpected, a lot of unexpected stuff here.
Nice.
Anyway, that's what to watch on streaming. Now we can all go home.
When did Sweet Pea come out? Have we mentioned Sweet Pea?
We didn't. Sweet Pea's in there. You just didn't see him.
I've only
I
just started
actually,
watching it tonight and it's bloody fantastic.
yeah,
Look, I
Sweet.
binged the whole thing in 2 nights.
Oh, you
Well,
guys.
I
I
would
was
have
going to
killed
have
it tonight,
Sweet
but
Pea
I
in
had to record
there.
this damn podcast.
Fine, fine. Okay, we'll talk about Sweet Pea because I didn't want to put Joker 2 in there, but I thought Joker 2 ties us in and we have to have Joker 2 in there. Sweet Pea obviously got a better rating than Joker 2. I enjoyed it. I haven't finished it.
Don't cheat maths, Kaz. Maths will come for you.
Yeah, well, clearly with Sweet Pea. It's on Sky and it's a deliciously dark little thing.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
Wonderful.
I do enjoy it and fabulous performance. Not entirely sold on her being a wallflower because I think she's naturally just eyes alone more striking than that.
She's a real
But
life manga character, isn't she?
she is. She is
So
definitely a
none of you lot
leader.
have seen it all the way through to the end.
I've
No.
just finished episode 4.
Yeah,
Right. So
I'm
that
about there,
little
maybe a bit further, but
I'm just going to warn you.
No,
To say
don't say a
to
word.
say it ends
Shh.
abruptly,
Well, they're looking at
things will
another season, aren't they? I
they
don't
better
know.
add. That's all I'm going to say. They better
Yeah.
add.
Okay.
But
Well,
yeah,
anyway,
it's nice and shout out so violent. Ooh.
Have you guys heard of a film called Kill from India?
I have, yes, I
Is this the
really.
Indian John Wick on a train that's even more violent
Yeah,
than all
I
that?
really wanted to see that, but there were
Not seen
issues
it.
with getting a preview for that, and
Any good
so
sign?
missed it.
It's pretty good.
Oh, nice.
Another unexpected raid on a train. Get from one end to the other,
Nice.
backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards.
The trailer looked insane.
It is pretty insane.
I mean, Sai's going to come off this call and watch Shadow Strays. That's what I'd do if you I were you, man. You would
No,
just
he's
come
gonna go for his
straight
sweet
off.
pea.
No,
God, well, yeah.
I would. It depends whether you want pure action or something that doesn't end.
Something that sadly does end.
All right. Okay. That's what to watch in October. Right. Let's look at top 10 things to watch on 4K and Blu-ray in October 2024. These are some of the best discs we've looked at. And we have looked at some. I mean, I'm
It's a
counting
good
like
month.
4 9 out of 10s and 1 10 out of 10. The rest are 8s, apart from American Pie, Mark. I mean, come on. It's easily an 8. Don't you do maths?
I'm just grumpy.
You
To be fair, at least you won from Paramount, so you know. Yeah.
you did a top 10 Blu-rays and you put Haxan from Radiance
Yeah,
at number one.
because no one or not enough people are watching 100-year-old Danish semi-documentaries about witchcraft,
It's not even an
and everyone
October
should.
release. It's not even an October release. They're
What can I
literally going to
say?
cut what you say about it and put it into next month's podcast.
Nice.
It's
Nice.
an
incredible film, actually. I saw it years ago on VHS from
what someone
Redemption.
else has seen it.
It's shockingly good, actually, considering the subject matter. Amazing.
And the release is amazing. There's four different versions on it and a whole host of extras. It's a great release from
You didn't watch all four
Radiance.
versions.
I didn't watch all four
You
versions. What, no, I didn't.
didn't. No.
One of them is narrated by Nutbag Will. Is it William S. Burroughs? You know, the
Right.
guy who was
Yeah.
Johnny Depp in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I will go and watch that version just to hear him try and hold a coherent conversation. But no, yeah. It's a great release. Great release.
Very nice. Very nice. American Pie is not a great release, I hear. I hear that it is almost a good release at 1999, but at like, what was it, 45?
No. This was the relatively cheap £30.
Oh, it's only £30, but no extras.
Yeah. But they didn't even port over all the extras from previous releases, and they gave us 2 15-minute new extras from crew you've never heard of and don't ever want to hear from. No offense to them. And then they had the temerity to call it the Ultimate Collector's Edition. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Get stuffed.
Yeah, that doesn't fly. What was the £45 one you recently?
That was The Ring.
Oh man.
Which definitely is not on this list.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna put that at the top of the list.
Well, you can put it at the top of the list.
Yeah, no, we're not gonna
only put we that see on. The list, Kaz.
Yeah, it is true. 4 out of 10 doesn't make the list. Air yeah. America, Studio Canal, 8 out of 10, Mel Gibson. That's all I'm gonna say there. It's fine. I enjoyed it. It's kind of nice. 80s, 90s Gibson, Robert Downey Jr., absolute nonsense based on a true story kind of plotting. And what I enjoyed was practical effects, real planes landing on really ridiculous runways, real nice. Crashes, real explosions. It was kind of that era where, yeah, sure, we'll roll this along a runway, let it lose both of its wings and crash. I mean, it was that Con Air era of stupidity, which
I've
just looks glorious. It's worth watching just for the, you know, the characters are Rob Downey Jr.'s character. He gets seconded to this Air America group, the CIA funded, you know, offshoot, which is running sort of war stuff to make money in the background. I'm going to call it that. I'm
not going to get
too much into the politics because it really doesn't. But anyway, he's a bit of a maverick pilot and he does really stupid things. But for early on, he gets caught up in a plane that has to land on a hill and he's sitting there going, we can't do this. It's a ridiculously short runway on a hill, like practically a mountain by our standards. And you watch it and you go, oh yeah, this is ridiculous. How are they doing this? But you don't actually process because we're so used to movies where everything's done in VFX that an actual stunt pilot did that. And I read that a lot of their stunt pilots quit the film and they had to get like veteran pilots who actually flew these kind of crazy things to do the stunts.
Nice.
Because they went in and landed on a real short stop hill and then brought it to a halt. And from the shots of it, both in plane and outside, it looked like an insane landing. Like you're going to die doing this. It's fine. Just die. You know, like it's just so it's that kind of movie that in 2024 reminds you of what crazy stuff people get up to. And now only like Tom Cruise gets up to.
Shut up, Kaz, and take all my money.
I remember seeing it when it first came out. And it was never quite as good as its potential.
No, I'd agree. Yeah. And I don't think it is.
Oh, I want my money back now.
No, it isn't. It isn't. But I'm saying for Mark, the nostalgia factor for me was definitely the stunts. I didn't appreciate those when I watched it back then because back then everything had practical stunts. But yeah, it is. It isn't as good as it should be with Mel Gibson and Robert Downey Jr. for sure. Twisters. Apparently, nobody liked this.
I did.
Apart from a couple of us, maybe. I mean, like, I enjoyed it. I would say that I don't, apart from the rose-tinted nostalgia, I don't know whether I hold the original Twister up so high that I'm outraged that this other one's come along and provided me with entertainment. But I quite enjoyed it. But anyway, there's that. Late Night with the Devil. We're drifting into the pure Halloween territory of the horrors that infuse the latter half of our top 10. But Late Night with the Devil from Second Sight. Beautiful box set from Second Sight, sorry.
Fantastic box set, yeah. A very, very faithful image. Looks exactly how you expect a 1970s TV show. It's based in America, but it could be from the UK, you know, the Parkinson type chat show. I Yeah, it's enjoyable, kind of. Yeah.
Not wanting to give anything away there.
Yeah,
Well, let's just call it a seven.
it's got a lot going for it. It didn't quite stick the landing.
You kind of see where it's coming or where it's going a mile away, don't you say?
It's kind of, it could have gone two ways, and it kind of didn't. It sort of stuck, went down the middle, and it's, but it's worth. I mean, the build up to the whole build up is fantastic. You know, that's really good, and the package is fantastic as well. Yeah.
I mean, they know how to do packages, don't they?
Oh, they
Nightmare on
do.
Elm Street, Warner's 8 out of 10 box set for this classic horror. Did
No,
you
it's not
get?
a box set. It's not a box. I got
No, it's
the
got.
standard single disc.
Oh, okay. You didn't get the one that looks like a
No.
VHS, but it's the wrong size.
No.
Oh man, I
Again,
bet you're
that's the
missing
ring.
that.
That's the ring, Kaz.
Is that the ring? Oh, what's the steelbook for Nightmare on Elm Street?
But the packaging for the UCE for Nightmare on Elm Street looks like the front of an old VHS, but the ring is
Is the
a
one that's like
VHS
okay?
tape.
There we
Yeah,
go.
yeah,
Okay. All right.
yeah.
They're both
No.
VHS's then. All
Yeah.
right. I won't have either, but yeah, sure.
Nightmare on Elm Street, I think a lot of people feared they were Warners were going to botch the transfer. They have tamed the grain a little bit, but they've done it fairly well. So we're not talking the James Cameron horror show of overly sharpened crystal clean images here. It looks very nice. Audio wise, you've got the original theatrical mono and a new Atmos track. You've got two cuts on there, the unrated cut, which is only about a minute longer. You've got the theatrical cut, and they've at least ported over all the extras from previous releases. And the fact that they can stick it out there on a 1999 disc, jobs are good, and I'll have that. It's 8 out of 10 every darn day of the week.
Nice. Inspector Calls, Studio Canal, 9 out of 10. We're getting into heavy territory here.
Yeah,
That's
well,
a
it's a classic, isn't it? Absolute
yeah,
classic.
a winner. I mean, they are releasing some classics, aren't
Yeah,
they?
they've got some real good stuff. Magnificent picture, great sound, good package. Yeah, and a fantastic film, you know.
I'm gonna
What's
get
not to
that.
love?
I'm
Yeah.
gonna get that.
And they
Yeah.
also go down the 1999 route, don't they? They're pretty,
Studio Canal, yeah.
yeah,
The
they're pretty
yeah, the
good, isn't
vintage classics, I think, are.
it? Yeah.
I mean, I'm still waiting for Cutthroat Island to come down to a decent price. That's stuck on the $22.99 for ages. Come on, get that down.
Oh,
Story
three
side.
quid. Hey, 3 quid. Go get a sandwich, fella. Smell
I'm an accountant, Si.
ya.
Tight is
Every
in my
penny
nature.
counts. Every penny
Tight is
counts.
in my nature.
Night of the Living Dead Criterion. It's not strictly, I'm gonna, is it an October release? Strictly a September release, maybe? I don't know. It's a already out release. We're gonna
Yeah.
say it's an October release. Everyone listening back home, it's definitely out in October.
Absolutely. That's
Classic
when I got it.
zombie flick. It definitely wasn't out like a couple of years ago on Criterion in the US at all.
No, this is the UK release.
Yeah,
And it's
great,
a
brand
very,
new.
very different release.
Yeah,
Yeah, no.
it's got UK
It's
and
got UK and a
18 or
UK
50.
certificate on it.
Yeah, there
Yeah.
you go. It's got a
There you go. See, so
certificate.
it's completely different.
Got a completely different certificate. Yeah.
Yeah, classic film. I didn't, you know, everyone's heard of it. Everyone loves it. It's a brilliant film. It looks fantastic. No HDR on it, but I'm not sure that it would have benefited. Maybe not. I mean, Inspector Calls and Third Man have really benefited from it. Perhaps perhaps it would. Perhaps it won't. We'll never know. But it's a fantastic looking image. Load of extras. Real Criterion have done the film proud. And yeah, pick it up if
Nice.
you can.
Oh,
It's fabulous.
you tease there, Mr. Crust. Casually dropping in that you've seen The Third Man 4K.
Oh yeah, I watched it. Yeah, I've just
Ooh.
started writing it.
Oh, we're going to start talking about seeing things.
Oh,
Well, I've seen half of the next season of Silo. How about
not interested, Kaz. Not
that?
interested. There's no cuckoo clocks or Ferris wheels or
How do you
Orson Welles in
know?
Silo. You
How do you know?
know what? I'll watch it, and when there aren't, I'll come for you.
You won't
Yeah.
watch it.
No, you're right. I won't watch
You won't watch it.
it. I sat through the first series, and it was so dreary. Anyway. Back to this, but Third Man Sai, thumbs up.
Yeah, so
But
far,
don't,
yeah.
no, don't
Oh,
tell
nice.
us.
That's
Okay.
all I needed.
Don't
That's
give
all I
us a
needed.
number if you're going to tell us. You have to give us a number.
He doesn't.
For the package?
No, I'm joking.
So it's quite
17,
difficult because
36.
well, it's difficult because the only thing that makes this different from, I mean, apart from the 4K it's for natural 4K. I mean, the restoration is nearly 10 years old. That doesn't matter. It still looks and sounds fantastic. But it's been put in this huge package worth of tat, and they slapped 45 quid on it? I don't know if it's worth that money.
Yeah, I've got my pre-order in.
You know, Si's already got
because I'm saving me £3.
Well.
Saving me £3. All those £3, so they add up. Like absolutely, they add up.
There you go, Mr. Christ. Yeah, yeah.
All right, you got it.
You've also got Seven Samurai, sir.
I do. I've not spun that yet. I do have it.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying
it
to
my mom. I have it all over my body.
I get American Pie and Si gets bloody the third man. So, do you know what? Who do I have to sleep with round here to get decent discs?
I've got
honestly.
I've got some Critters here for you, Mark, and I've got lots of Shaw Brothers. Is that
no? You already sent me Shaw Scope Volume Three.
I can't even be asked to crack. No,
that.
This one is not.
Oh no,
isn't Shaw Volume Three? This is new Shaw, a three pack of Shaw action spy thrillers or something.
Just go away.
Yeah. It's three
just
for one.
Make them stop.
Yeah, they don't do single film releases.
Just send some 70s kung fu crusts way. Honestly,
I think he'd forward it.
I'm sure he'll get this in the post.
Yeah.
Fine.
Trick or Treat from Arrow. 9 out of 10.
Trick or Treat.
Trick or yeah. Oh, come on. Yeah, that yeah. Trick or Treat.
Fantastic Halloween anthology. It is literally awesome. The embodiment of the celebration of Halloween.
Yeah.
Five really nifty little short stories with a fair dose of blood and guts. But there's just a real twinkle in the eye of the whole thing, and it's super charming, it's super cute, but it's super bloody. It is literally Halloween wrapped up in 82 minutes, and it's
brilliant. That's awesome.
And the 4K release is pretty good. The HDR and Dolby Vision is the real reason for this. It looks amazing. The colours, it's virtually lit by jack-o'-lantern light. and just the blacks are deep. The candle lights are bright. It looks really good. Touch soft, but that's probably inherent to the source. And just a huge amount of extras on there as well. There's a fantastic, I don't normally look at these, but there is a comic on there. You know, we have to navigate through the pages and I never normally watch them, but it is the classic Universal monsters coming into the world of Trick or Treat. It's like a Monster Squad / Trick or Treat /
you love
Costello Meet the Universal Monsters. It was brilliant. I literally spent about half an hour just flicking through this comic like that on screen. It was great. So yeah, great package.
Nice. Well, that got a 9 out of 10 from there. African Queen, Classic Bogart, Classic Hepburn.
Classic,
yeah. I got a 10 out of 10 from me. That's another Studio Canal winner. And I put as our top pick Exorcist 3, because even though it scored slightly less, it overall was 9 out of 10. I have to say, I did not
expect... It's a tremendous package, isn't it?
Yeah, and I didn't expect after Exorcist... and Exorcist 2 to get Exorcist 3. So it was a very, very nice winner. And to get that now in 4K on a gorgeous set, I mean, that's, it doesn't get much better than that.
I mean, it's typical Arrow in that there's no new extras and all they've done is literally slap a 4K transfer on the existing release. Having said that, it's a very nice 4K release. And if you stop to think about it, there's probably nothing else they could add to the rosters list. There's so much stuff on there. There's the two cuts, the commentaries, the feature length making of, all the good stuff there. In fact, I think what Arrow really should have done is package Exorcist 2, The Heretic, in there as a bonus disc rather than the standalone.
You know what? I think that's not such a bad idea. I think they could do with... I mean, I think I thought if the rights had been... there, that they would have done that with Chronicles of Riddick and Riddick. I know it was never going to happen, but I thought they could have really, really blown
it out.
They
didn't have the rights, did they? That was the
no, they
Riddick,
didn't.
So.
But I felt like like a 3-disc limited edition of Riddick would have been I mean, I'm not going to say it. Yeah. No, I am going to say it. Ridiculous. Yeah, but
oh dear.
But I think that things like that, where they could just throw in the next movie and complete the set. I mean, it seems like a nice deal. But anyway, I picked that as the number one. It's certainly a glorious selection of discs for any one month. It's a really, really good month, and we haven't had to bolster it by US imports. I mean, this is a great release schedule for UK discs, and really very timely horror-centric releases for Halloween.
It's like they realize Halloween comes around every year and can plan ahead, Kaz, isn't it?
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Who'd have thought?
It's like they've realized that in 2024 Halloween, they should release all of the Halloween classics.
Crazy.
Right, quick shout out for Evergreen. Evergreen is our ongoing quest for world domination via completely renewable, self-renewing articles. And it's not self, it's myself who's renewing them, but yeah, it's evergreen. It's about sustainability, and it's about green planet. No, it's about the best things you can watch on Netflix, Amazon, and Disney. And we put together a series of articles. We've done genres, and we've done hero articles, which combine the genres into the best things you can watch of all time. And we'll be updating them, as people have noted from our Disney list. The indie movies have dropped off, and so we'll be
boo,
updating
streamers them. Boo.
I know, don't even that, I mean, that is a problem. I'm going to quickly say that is a problem in general with evergreen articles, is that a lot of the best of on these lists, apart from with Netflix, who by and large keep their content by and large for their Netflix original branding, both Amazon and Disney appear to drop their content.
Yeah.
The indie
ones, stick
it
behind a paywall.
Yeah, the indie ones are a big, big bad thing for Disney, but also they lost a few Disney originals, which they just thought weren't very good. And
I think the thing with the indie ones, though, it makes you wonder, did they ever get them on a timed license from Paramount?
Must be.
Because
Must
Paramount
be.
Own them. They're not, those first three are not Disney films. Well, even the first four are not Disney films.
It must be a year for some kind of backing on Isle of Destiny or something.
Yeah.
And by the same token, these Lionsgate and Signature titles that go to Amazon, it must be a time thing, because some of their choice titles have started appearing as only to buy. So you're going to see all of those Amazon originals, and I'm going to air quotes the hell out of them, all of the ones from Guy Ritchie, you know, like The Covenant, Wrath of Man, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and that Ruse de Guerre, Operation Fortune, you know, all the Statham-style stuff. Eventually, I think it's going to time-lapse, and then they're going to say, give us some money. So the thing about these articles is that they will be constantly evolving, and these streaming services don't make it easy for us to just
Slimes.
Go, yeah, these are the movies. We've also tried to pick up a lot of the gems from there. Netflix does apparently have some gems, but it's interesting from the list, they're still batting lower than Amazon and Disney in their top tier. So they're still aspiring to eights as being their elite tier, whereas Amazon can hit several nines, and Disney can go full out on the tens, because Disney have all the old Fox classics. So yes. Disney don't even have to bother making good new stuff, because they've just got 10 out of 10 Fox movies and their own 10 out of 10 classics, which they can put together to just form an unbeatable selection. Anyway, we've done these evergreen articles. If you want to go into them, yeah, you can have a look through, and certainly, particularly on the Amazon list, I would say that there's a nice selection of things like American Fiction, Saltburn, Palm Springs. There's going to be stuff in there across a wide variety of genres that you haven't come across.
I have to admit, the surprising thing with these is it's easy for us, who are asked to watch a lot of these things, to have seen a lot of those and assume a lot of people have seen all those films. Yeah. But I think some of the comments in the Evergreen review, Evergreen article threads actually shows the opposite, that even those people who are, you know, cine literate, savvy, and watch more than is sensible for, you know, normal human
they
beings,
miss them.
Still
they
manage
miss them.
To miss them. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely go and check them out and I mean, see if there's anything you're missing.
Ridiculous churn when it comes to streaming. Mad. If you haven't watched the latest Netflix movie in the week of release, ain't no one talking about it, you know, in 3 months' time or 6 months' time. It's a ridiculous churn on it. And I think that's very true, Mark, because on these lists there are ones that you'd hold out as being really good, but you might not think about it. I don't think there are very many originals, Netflix originals or even Amazon originals, that I've gone back and gone, I'm going to watch that again.
Yeah,
because it's just gone from the top 10 trending list. Mm-hmm. It's gone from all of the visibility, and there's always something new, even if it's not as good as those gems.
Yep. Completely.
Anyway, I've got to watch Spaceman, the Adam Sandler one.
Mm-hmm. No, say hi to Hanus for me.
These spiders. Right. Our discussion of the month is to flop or not to flop. We're looking at 10 of amongst the biggest box office disappointments of 2024. Now, before I get into this, I'm going to say there are a lot of rules you can apply to how you figure out whether it's a loss. You can just go straight in and say break even is about 2.5 the budget of any film. And the maths of that is based on the total cost of the film times 1.5. So that's the production budget times 1.5, which includes the marketing. Then you have to account for them not getting 100% of the box office, which is a variable figure depending on domestic or international. And so you could give a blanket 60% across box office yield. That gets you your 2.5. So your break even on a movie that costs 100 million is your 250 million. And if it doesn't make 250 million at the box office, then it's lost out, according to this maths. But it's very dependent on a bunch of different factors, one of them being China, another of them being the disproportionate domestic box office. So something like Top Gun Maverick doing gangbusters in the US is going to make a huge difference to its ultimate yield, and another being marketing. So I read a report that said that the original Joker had a production budget of, I think, 40 million, but that production budget only accounted for something really paltry of its overall budget, including marketing, like 20%. So the actual amount they spent on Joker, including marketing, was insane in comparison to its small production budget. Whereas Joker 2, which we'll come on to in a bit, allowed for a little bit more in there. It's a much more sort of proportionate 40%.
So maths, Kaz, yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, basically, we've come up with a list of 10. Really,
don't come out as if we've got the exact amount by which wrong.
I guess I'm obviously trying to say it's completely wrong and it's largely made up, but there is a maths kind of scheme to it. And
perfecto.
The first one on our list, I completely disagree with. I think it should be like top of the list. But anyway, it's Borderlands. I gave it a 5 out of 10, and I thought it was barely tolerable, I would describe it as. And thinking back on it, I might have given it lower because I have no interest in watching it again. And it was one that the kids were ready to switch off. And it should be something that works for everybody. It was just a clumsy fit, jokes didn't land, and a
miscast
lot of money.
Well,
yeah, miscast. So it didn't work for me.
I was going to say those numbers.
Yes,
so
exactly.
Just looking at your numbers, this had an approximate $120 million budget.
Yes.
Therefore, with the math,
with the 2.5 that you've just about 300 million is the
break even, and it made
33 million. Right.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, it's phenomenally bad. Now, the interesting thing about this is that they've reported that the loss for this film is going to come in at about 30 million. So I have no idea what the behind the scenes maths are is on that. So some of these are
Future sales
calculated
for this
costs.
on streaming, maybe?
No, I mean the box office should include some of the sales on streaming that have been made already. I mean, I don't.
I mean, so with some of the stars, you've got to wonder if there's some back-end deals going on there. So actually, because it's made nothing, they've not had to pay out any of the stars
Don't
or
make money,
whatever
you don't get
fees.
paid.
Yeah, I mean,
Well, they want a percentage rather than a salary, you mean?
I
Possibly.
mean, it just felt. I mean, I've only ever played the game a couple of times, but the whole concept of a game that has dropped out of, the zeitgeist, not just the zeitgeist, the consciousness of gamers years ago, coupled with a bang average, everyone could see it was trying so hard to be Guardians of the Galaxy, crammed full of, I mean, they're big stars for us, but you'd argue the audience who want to see this don't care about Cate Blanchett, they don't care about Jamie Lee Curtis, don't care about Jack and Eli Roth.
I know.
What that, just wherever
But
you looked on this, it just felt odd.
playing devil's advocate, I would say Jumanji. There is an idea behind this that they could get a Jumanji vibe going within Borderlands, with the casting, with the humor crossed with action. And I could see how a different director might have pulled that off. This director. No, I read something, some quote from him saying that he got inspiration from watching his dog take a dump.
Sounds about right for Eli Roth. Anyway, Kaz, so you've seen
Right.
this. We haven't seen this. Is it a flop
But I'm not
or is
interested
it
either.
not?
No, yeah, well, that's a part of it. I think people not interested is a big sign of it as well. But I think that this is a flop that deserves to be a flop, which is our point.
Hooray. Hooray.
Okay. Fall Guy. Fall Guy, 125 to 150 million budget, break even there by being about 300 million, made 181 at the box office. So on paper, it should have been a profit, ended up with a loss reported at 50 to 60 million.
I absolutely adored this film.
Yes, I really enjoyed it, and I
Genuinely.
didn't know it was even going to make the flop list. And I
I thought it
just.
was fantastic.
I had a lot of fun with this, but I also kind of saw that there was some kind of marketing issue with it because I didn't know whether I was seeing it, whether I was taking the kids to see it, which I did end up doing, and they ended up enjoying it. But I knew there was a little hesitation. Like if I hadn't have been reviewing it, I might not have been inclined to just go, hey, let's all go and see this. And it's weird because it should be for my generation, our generation, all of our generations, but it isn't, or it is, I don't know.
No, see, and I think that this is where it calling itself the Fall Guy and basing the entire thing around that IP made no sense, because you're absolutely right.
Yes.
You know, the TV show was, I'm sure if you asked me, well, ask me now, I'll say it was absolutely fantastic. If I watched it now, I'd
Terrible.
want to probably rip
Probably
my own
terrible.
eyes out.
Yeah,
And
terrible.
it was just typical episodic 80s TV fare, a stuntman who was a bounty hunter, and then each week it was
After a new
he's
guy.
chasing after someone different. The T linking it to the TV show is probably the mistake,
Yes.
if you ask me,
Yes. Oh, yes.
because people of our generation will go, there's no way they could make a decent film out of that. I'm not going. And the minute kids hear it's based on an 80s TV, I'm
They'd
not
be
going to
like,
see
what?
that. And it's almost like just call it anything else, but have the exact same film, and
They
I
could have called
guarantee
it
you
The
stick 100 million
Stuntman.
on the box office.
Yeah, they could have called it The Stuntman and had Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt and walk their way towards a huge box office because I can't believe that this has made our list.
No, I know. I thought this was, it was just so fun. It was proper old school. Back to what you said, it was practical explosions. It was big stars having chemistry and
Oh, great
being
chemistry.
starry.
Yeah, it was
You
great
know,
chemistry.
Ryan Gosling in this.
Yes.
I'm going to catch some flack for this. Cary Grant.
No, he was great. He really knew how to play it. Yes, he really did.
He was so good in this. I love this film.
Yeah, I got
not
a, lot of time for
a
that.
Flop.
Not
no,
a flop.
It should not have been a flop.
Should not have been a flop. Absolutely agree.
Bloody love that film.
Furiosa, $168 million budget, break even $350 to $375 million, $174 million box office, reported loss $75 to $95 million. I mean, we're obviously doing this in larger and larger losses. I would say that of the ones we've encountered so far, this is the first one that I'd give a sort of legacy pass to, because I think that more than the other ones, this is part of a wider pitch at making real memorable IP classics, as it were, particularly for Warner. A bit like Dune doing at the box office. I can see how these are going to be gems that they have within their roster. So I don't know whether they regard it as being as bad a loss as some others. The only person who's going to regard it as a loss really is Miller, who won't get to make another one for 10 years. Mm. But that's okay, because he wasn't planning on doing that anyway. It would take me 10 years anyway. So
this one baffles me. Of all the films on that list, I can see why there is a reason behind why they didn't make the box office cheddar. This one I don't understand. But
I don't know. I think for me, and I said this before and was shouted down, and I appreciate that, but honestly, I think that it confused audiences putting Mad Max in the title because it was not a Mad Max film at all. Mm. And I think that for people who knew Fury Road, Furiosa, saw a trailer or a poster, they'd go, oh, that could be a bit like Fury Road. I'm going to go and see this. They're not going to see it and go, I don't know what that's about. I'm just going to ignore it. I'm going to much more relate to it if you tell me it's a Mad Max movie. And then if you tell them it's a Mad Max movie and Mad Max isn't in it and it isn't a character in it, I mean, you know, that's going to disappoint.
True, but and I think the same will definitely come to a number of these, which is, but so much of this box office is dependent on opening night, you know, and almost people on opening weekend will have made up their mind to go or not before those kind of reviews have started to come out. That's what I'd think anyway. So therefore, I accept your point, but surely people will have made up their mind to not go before word comes out that Max isn't in it. So
the logic applies even if you think Max could be in it, because you've called it Furiosa. You've called it Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. So you're really throwing everything in there, aren't you? You're calling it Furiosa, which is nothing really to do with Max other than a character who he wasn't involved with in the time that this is set. And then you're saying a Mad Max saga.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what does a Mad Max saga even mean? Why are you saying that? Mm-hmm. So I think that, I mean, they're doing this a lot, aren't they? They're doing John Wick, from the world of John Wick, Ballerina.
Ballerina. Yeah.
I mean, what? The official title for a movie is that?
So, well, having said that, Wick is in it.
Yes, but they could just call it Ballerina and people are going to go and see it. There's enough of momentum here.
This is where us and modern marketing just don't see eye to eye, because we just don't understand it, do we?
Is this the same modern marketing that do the trailer for Megalopolis where they just have worst film ever? They said it was going to be disastrous. They get Larry Fishburne's in there narrating this trailer, and then it gets pulled from the internet because it was made by generative AI. I mean, Jesus Christ, marketing.
And actually, probably quite prescient.
Yeah, I know. Marketed by Skynet.
Yeah. Anyway, so Furiosa, I have my issues with it, but yeah, I agree. It shouldn't have been a flop. That's a not flop.
Also, we want more movies than this, was what I said about We want more movies.
I'm done. I'm fine.
Go see the podcast about us talking about that film. Well worth it.
Nice.
On-brand crust. On-brand.
Yes. Very nice. Horizon, an American saga, chapter one. Right. So $50 million budget, break even $125 million, made $38 million at the box office. So even though it was only a $50 million production, it's an $80 million loss. which is higher than a lot of the other ones we've had here because of all of the other ancillary costs that go into it. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. And I think he might offset it, depending on whether or not he you know, gets seduced by a streamer. But this is another big swing, like with Miller's Furiosa, another big swing by a big director, Costner. I'm going to go all out on this four-part epic Western series. But there needs to be the audience for it. And I think it was a wild gamble. Now, has anyone else seen Horizon?
No.
See, this is the problem.
Yeah.
And I'm going to come into this later with Megalopolis, the most obvious example here. The problem is that we are the target audience for an epic Western by Kevin Costner in 2024. And only one of us have seen it. And I'll tell you right now, it is a quarter of a movie. There is no reason why I would sell it to you two who love Westerns and would happily watch a well-done new Western when I feel like it's a quarter of a movie and who knows when we're going to get the other three quarters.
Do you know what? That's exactly it, Kaz. Because if you go back to our what were the films we're most looking forward to of 2024,
that's right in there.
I think we had this as number two. And we all were predicting this being an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
And what stopped me going was exactly that. It's a quarter of a broader film. The reviews were saying, including yours, your very well written one, I might add, Mr. Harlow, you know, saying that there's absolutely not enough story to sustain the runtime of this. And you just think, well, get stuffed, Costner. I'll go and watch Open Range again, which I did. I watched Open Range earlier this year. Brilliant.
Yes. Go and watch Open Range until we know what the hell's happening with the rest of this, because I want it to be completed. I want to go and watch it. But
shouldn't we have already had Chapter 2 by now? Wasn't that the plan?
Yes,
I've not seen it appear on any release schedule.
Three months apart they were supposed to be, yeah.
So guess what? That's just ballsed up, isn't it?
Yeah.
And whether it's... I mean, Costner isn't shy. I'm sure he's got all that Yellowstone hubris, you know, and all that kind of stuff burning inside him. But who in their right mind thought that when you've got streaming platforms literally there, that would have been, you could have turned this story into a 12 episode mega season.
Yeah.
You know, jobs are good and hour long episodes a week, people would have lapped it up.
And
but no,
the answer is for stuff like this, the sensible decision would be to get the backing of a streamer because as much as I hate saying it, Snyder picked well. Okay, he goes and decides to do a billion parts of Rebel Moon, irrespective of whether or not there's an appetite for it. Get paid up front. He's got it there. Whether or not they stick it in cinemas, I'm sure Costner could have made a deal where it goes to, I don't know, Apple, straight after its cinema release and got paid to make all four parts. That's the thing. It doesn't matter how good a first part is if he's not going to make the rest. I mean, anyway, disappointing. So Horizon is a real tough one for me because I want to say it doesn't deserve to, but it really does.
One where it's its structure and form over its content killed that one.
I really want movies like this to do well, but, you know, we don't... I feel like we live in an age where everything's about the franchise and it's surprises, shocks to the system like this that might remind people to make one good movie before they decide to make four.
Absolutely.
The Crow... you know what? I don't know how I ended up being the one to review this because I love the first one. So at least it could have been someone who thought that the first one was bang average.
No, but everyone loves the first one, Kaz. That's the problem.
I mean, it is a real problem. But, you know, I know a lot about the original Crow and I'm fully aware that it is a lightning in a bottle combination of events, including like... tragic losses on the part of the original writer that inform a narrative that gets filmed by a star who dies mid-production tragically. There's so much tragedy in the actual story of the production of the original Crow, I can't see why someone would think that they can just remake it. And well, if they wanted to remake it and copy the original Crow graphic novel, they might have stood a chance at telling at least a fresh take. But this isn't. This is just another completely made up reinterpretation. And it's bad, man.
I mean, I don't, my guts don't churn at the thought of a remake, because let's be honest, Brandon Lee's body was barely cold before they were wheeling out shitty sequels. So, you know, I'm less precious about that. But everything you saw in that first trailer just was, it was so many nails in the coffin of me ever seeing this.
It was
Skarsgård was miscast.
It was
the entire mood and the look of him was just, my God, it just made me want to heave. And then, of course, the reviews came out and they were so bad.
I think I kind of was worried it was going to be good, so went into it slightly more open-minded than I expected. But I really found that it knocked on my door of don't ever watch this again. And I really didn't expect that. I think I'd heard about good moments and good ideas, and I did not see them. And I just come off Skarsgård in Boy Kills World, and actually thought I was I was just disappointed
that
he'd done that, which had surprised me, and then did this, and it was so damn generic. And so look, let's get this tattooed guy and just go have him wandering around. It's,
I mean, again, 50 million budget.
Yep.
And it made, so then even before you had everything else, it only made 23 million at the bottom. I mean,
yeah. Don't you everything,
don't that's, but I think that one is one where the blanket review bombing of that. And I mean, we ain't talking, it's all right, it's average. Every single review I saw just went to town on its ass. Every single, I think yours, Kaz, was probably one of the more charitable ones I read. But I'm not surprised. I mean, this one had flop written all over it.
It did, and well deserved it. You know what?
Yeah,
they should have just done another Crow story.
Yeah,
and I reckon it would have gotten a lot more of a pass.
But again, or not? You could have taken that exact film if you had not called it The Crow, if you'd not made him Eric Draven, if you'd not
IP, man, it's all about the IP.
But again, it's the IP strangled it. The fact that you could have made that new emo goth supernatural revenge film that could have been spat out on a streamer under any old generic name, you know, The Winged Demon's Revenge or some crap like that, and I guarantee you more people would have watched it.
Yes.
But again, you call it The Crow because you're chasing those IP books, and look what happens, it backfires.
Backfired.
Come on, let's see this year. I mean, this year there's a lot of flops on this list and a lot of money being lost. Let's hope this serves as a wake-up call to these people who think IP is everything, because it isn't. Speaking of which, Sony,
Madam Web,
you asshats.
It is an interesting thing with Madam Web. So Madam Web is the first one of these terrible movies, which I'd say was so bad that I actually found it vaguely entertaining.
I will agree.
Unintentionally so, and it still deserves my 4 out of 10. But of all of them, unlike the 4 out of 10 I gave The Crow, I'd watch it again just to take the mickey out of it. I mean, it was proper stupid acting, stupid ideas, stupid bunch of characters, a cast who weren't invested in it. And as soon as the camera stopped rolling, started shouting and screaming about how it was just a paycheck job and they demeaned themselves to star in this big superhero movie. I mean, it was a whole lot of stupid nonsense. It was stuff that my 8-year-old son called out. That it takes a lot for my son, who wears Spider-Man outfits, to call out a Spider-Man related movie in any way. But who are those people in the jungle? What are they doing? Yes, it was.
I agree, because this had a lovely throwback to those really cheesy, those really poor direct-to-video filler that you used to get the back end of the 80s and the 90s, where you would pick up the box in the video shop and it would have the best box art. You know, yeah. I mean, to be honest, the box art of this would have a semi-naked Dakota Johnson, a semi-naked Sydney Sweeney. And I'd be renting it every Friday for a year, guaranteed, But it was, like you said, it was so deliciously bad. You know, the line readings were so poor,
really,
and the
bad.
Script was genuinely hilarious. And I agree with you, it was utterly preposterous, but in a way that almost was endearing.
Yeah, it was almost endearing.
Almost. Because again, I think what Sony are doing with this, you know, this whole, I mean, Venom, Madam Web, Kraven the Hunter. I mean, just, you haven't got Spider-Man. Just give up. No one is coming to see these films because of Spider-Man, because we know he's not in it.
Yeah.
I know. Give up. That's the most egregious part.
If they'd have called it Madam Web, a Spider-Man saga.
Spider-Man saga.
No, do you know what? I'd have just called it Madam Web, an American saga chapter 2. Just to confuse people, and still more people would have probably gone.
100 million budget, 250 million break even, 100 million box office, over 100 million loss. Boom. Joker, the one we came to see. Joker Folie à Deux. Now, this was a 200, this is interesting. A 200 million budget, break even was reported at 375 to 450 million, the 450 being it's short of the 2.5 multiple, which would have been 500. 190 million box office, estimated loss 150 to 200 million. It's a big, big loss.
It's a big loss, 190 million, and it's still a big loss. Incredible.
I mean...
But why did they spend that much money on it?
And that's the problem. You look at it, and you hear musical, and you think it's going to be huge, epic, sweeping, technicolor stages, and it's not. It's none of that. It is literally a couple of prison cells, a courtroom, and that's literally it. No one knows where that $200 million has gone.
Unless
unless it's literally, you know, Phoenix and Phillips, they just said, I don't want to do this. And Warner just kept throwing money at them until they said, go on then. You can imagine them getting together going, what number do you think is so outrageous they'll just leave us alone? Go on, you reckon 50? Go on, tell them 50. 50 million each, Mr. Warner, and they've just gone sold.
But I mean, there must be something, because they made Madam Web on 100 million. And I'm not saying Madam Web is Flash, but it's got some visual effects in there. It's just weird, isn't it?
The thing with this, and I hate to say it, but the fact that it snuck out that there was musical elements to this killed this film. Absolutely killed it stone dead. Because there is no other reason. You look at the reviews. A lot of the reviews have been sniffy, shall we say, but there are critical sections that actually say, do you know what? It's actually pretty good. It's brave, it's daring, it's different, it's everything the first one wasn't in a good way, blah, blah, blah. So you had that sort of wave of critical where someone could look at it and go, oh, I might go and make my own mind up. The only thing that put people off was either Gaga or it was a musical, because it had to be, because people didn't show up on opening day for this. What was it? 38 million opening weekend? There is a reason before the reviews came out that people stayed away. And when you think of the audience that flocked to the first film, the only thing I can think of is it's a musical starring Lady Gaga. Boom, I'm out. And I mean, that pains, because I think I love a musical.
I mean,
I think musicals are brilliant.
I was all up for this, but I'm not sure that I was ever fully believing of how it would work. This was one of my most anticipated movies of the year.
Yeah.
Loved the first movie. Love Gaga. Really looking forward to this. When it came out and you reviewed it, I'm going to watch it at home. It was literally how I felt about it. And I'm the target audience. I love everything Batman. And loved the Joker's version of, like, Taxi Driver. I was all in on a sequel. but it feels like whatever they wanted to do for sequel, I think, you know what, it's the reviews. It's what you wrote in your review about that it was a bit, it was taking a bit of a cynical jab at audiences. Felt a little bit, I don't know whether I wanted to risk that. Whatever they were shooting for, I know you didn't phrase it like that, but, you know.
Well, that is what it felt like. And a lot of reviews did say that it was a proactive thumb to the eye of fans of the first film. I don't know if I'd go that far. You could equally look at that and go, oh, actually, it's a brave re-envisioning of the first film, just as much as you could say it was a cynical snub. But it's too weird a film. Now, I don't mind weird films, but not every weird film costs 200 million and needs to make half a billion to break even.
I mean, it was a very, very big swing. The next two are streaming titles. So, and I know they got theatrical releases, but I had completely overlooked them in the list. I'd gone, they're on Apple. So by being on Apple, a bit like Rebel Moon, which doesn't make this list because it didn't get a theatrical run, no one cares in a way about the loss because they just sling Six Underground money at, and no one talks about it afterwards. Fly Me to the Moon, though, cost 100 million. Break-even was 250, made 42 at the box office, and posted a loss of 200 plus million. That's, I mean, and I'm going to jump straight onto Argyle, because these both kind of scored similar scores. 200 million budget, which I personally was shocked at. I understand that there are effects in there, but 200 million budget, I know it's not Joker 2, but... But it was quite a lot to throw at Argyle, which is a unique IP. There's nothing behind it. It's quite a lot of money to sling at that. The break even was reported at 500 million, and it made 96 million, which is posting a loss of over 400 million. Now, I'm wrapping these two up together with ridiculous losses and saying that Apple don't really care, because what it will amount to is people who come to the streaming service to watch these tentpole figures, this tentpole movies. But is it really worth it? I mean, these are, you know, just go and watch Coda. You know, like, these are not great movies. I mean, you enjoyed Argyle, Mark, and even you don't really need to throw people at going to see it.
I did enjoy it. I mean, the problem with Argyle was it was, and I can understand the 200 million budget, because you basically made three full films and then smushed them together really awkwardly to make one.
Really awkwardly,
I mean, the money's on screen. I will give it that. But again, it's another one of these. It's a very weird film, and weird cannot cost 200. We do not live in a world where a weird film costing $200 million is fiscally rewarded. We do not live in that world. So I agree with you. Why would you throw $200 million at Argyle in the first place? I mean, I haven't seen Fly Me to the Moon. But
you might or might not watch it on Apple.
Yeah.
But like, you wouldn't go and see it at the cinema, and it's okay. It's just not something that you want to lose that kind of money.
Well, I think the thing is, and this is where I think you're right to stick these two at the end. We don't know the true sort of fiscal position. He's like you say, we have no idea, and probably the streamers don't know. If you spend 200 million on Argyle, how do you justify that to Apple in terms of streaming? To offset the cost, we need this to bring in X number of new subscribers. Well, how do you know that those new subscribers There's no way of knowing it. So I think these two are really tricky, because yes, you're right. You look at the box office figures and the disastrous, but they were limited cinema runs just so they could get it out of the way and then get it on the streaming platform. So I think this is where the model, well, it's not that the model's flawed, because I'm sure there are bigger business brains in these organizations who can look at that and go, yep, that was exactly what we planned and what we needed it to do for whatever reason. We just can't think of it, because all we think about is box office in the, you know, old school the old school ways.
If these were both 8 out of 10 movies posting the same numbers, I could see why a streaming platform would be very happy to have made them, because they're Apple originals. They can have tentpole movies that they celebrate on their platform, that they can believe that people will join just to see these movies who haven't seen them at the cinema, and they can swallow the losses. They're big name stars they put in these. But pulling out bang average movies and then spending this money on them, I think it's a bad idea. And no, I'm going to say that the last three, Joker and the two Apple ones, deserve to flop.
I mean, Joker, yes, it is a flop. There's no two ways it can be described as anything but too weird. I haven't seen Fly Me to the Moon. I quite liked Argyle. I like that it was so messy. I like that it was so brazen. I like that it was so weird. So I'm going to say that that's not a flop, just really? To be awkward.
Yeah.
Even at 200 million?
Well, it's not my money. I don't care.
Which brings us to the one that none of us have seen. Now, the interesting thing about this is it is for us. I'm a massive Coppola fan. I love all his classic movies. They're some of the few movies I still have out on the shelf in lavish box sets. Absolute gorgeous classics. Yes, even that stupid conversation box set that comes with like a tape. I mean, he's a filmmaker who, coming out of sort of semi-retirement to throw his own Vineyard money at a big epic, with all-star epic. I mean, it should have been a time for celebration. None of us have gone to see this. In fact, the one person who has gone to see it is Tom, and he's told us how bad it was. And we've all gone, yeah, we're not going to do it. This is freaking Francis Ford Coppola. Francis Ford Coppola has got $120 million budget indie film in the cinemas with a calculated break-even of $300 million. And he has got 11 million in receipts. So this is going to post a loss of about a quarter of a billion.
Wowza.
That's mad. Yeah.
And especially as it is his own money. It's all his own money. Because I don't know if a studio picked up all the marketing.
He had to do a lot of the marketing.
All on him.
I mean, he might not have spent what a studio would have spent on marketing. In his defense, it might not have amounted to 300 million. This is based on the 2.5 multiple.
Yeah.
But that is crazy numbers. I love the fact that he set up his own Letterboxd account after Megalopolis was released and rated Megalopolis five stars.
Because that's going to make all the kids go. So what stopped you boys from seeing that?
Tom.
For me,
just Tom. Sorry, Tom.
No, for me, it was Tom. I was intrigued in it. I had heard that it looked flawed, and the king of seeing. I mean, I love a good underdog flawed movie that I can see like what it could have been. I love a good what it could have been movie.
Gods of Egypt, that's what you love, Kaz.
Yeah Under Siege 2, yeah, what it could have been. Yeah, I mean, I love a real, it's got a history behind it, and you squint your eyes and yeah, this could have been great. Yeah. I mean, sure. And Tom definitely does. He's a big sucker for terrible movies where it could have been amazing. Just there's like a tiny little crack that destroys it, and he came out of it saying that was just a mess, a mess that's worth seeing, but not it didn't in any way make me think I want to see this at the cinema. It made me think I want to see this for as little as possible on a streaming platform I already pay for, if I can be bothered later down the line. And I wanted it to be a nice epic Coppola film. I wanted it to be something like, you know, good, but it doesn't sound like it has any of that about it. And the production sounds terrible. It sounds like 18 hours of the day in his trailer coming out to perfect, you know, a single shot. And even then, it doesn't look memorable. I mean,
Too busy groping extras.
Oh.
So, allegedly.
Yes.
I don't know, what about you, Si? Was it the same for you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I don't always take what you guys say as gospel, but particularly you. But but Tom, you know.
Yeah. Thanks, no, Si.
He was so eloquent in his description, and I thought, you know what?
Yeah. Didn't you just say it was shit? I'm joking. But yeah,
I mean, part of this for me, it was, I got a whiff of Coppola's folly. And I think the fact that he was so adamant that this was the film he'd been waiting his entire career for, that, you know, he was going to fund with his own money because no one else is on the same intellectual plane to understand what he's trying to do. Yeah. And for it to come out and the reviews be so laughably bad, I think a lot of it was like, well, that's on you, Francis. You're not having my money, you little scamp.
Yeah, I can see that. It did turn out woefully bad. It's just you look at something like was it Twixt he did that was messy,
oh, God,
and then he did a new cut of it and it turned out to be also messy.
Still dreadful. You know?
Yeah, but he must have spent like 8 million on it. He spent 120 million on this. I mean, this isn't Twixt. This is I mean, and he opened himself up to a decade of mega flopolis.
I'd rather have spent 8 million on an actual Twix.
That would have been cashing in on IP. Anyway, I would say that is our biggest example.
Flop!
It is a flop. It deserved to be a flop. It's got us all sitting around. You know, I don't even know whether even without Tom sentencing it to death, I would have gone to see it. But it was a movie for us, for our generation, for Coppola fans. We're still out there celebrating his classics as they land on 4K and talking about how great he is.
Yeah.
For him to pull out a movie that we don't want to go and see at the cinema, an epic indie blockbuster that we don't want to see at the cinema. Yeah. I mean, it's bad. End of day's bad. Right. That is our to flop or not to flop. Let us know what you think about our crazy ass list and what you think about some of
2024
our
year of the flops.
Oh, fingers crossed not. That's it for me. I say thank you to Simon.
No, thank you.
And I say thank you for Mark.
No, thank you.
And I said it separately, so you both got your thank yous in.
Thank you.
Good night and enjoy. Goodbye, peeps.